Hey, everybody, it's Tommy Canelli. Please go to our website, beforethelightspod.com. Over there, you can get all our episodes, show notes, contact information if you want to reach out to us via email, or join our Patreon group. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Before the Lights Podcast. And if you have a couple minutes, head over to Apple Podcast, rate and review the show. 5 stars, nice comments are always appreciated. Welcome to Before the Lights, the show to find out how those in sports, music, and entertainment made their mark. Let's get this one off the ground. Go get your coffee or get a drink, depending on what time of day it is, and tell your family, friends, neighbors, and strangers the show is starting. Today, we have an Olympic silver medalist. She holds numerous MVPs, 17 different championship titles. That's right, 17. Plays for Team USA. She's one of the most dominant players in professional softball, an 8-time all-national professional fast pitch player, a 5-time NPF Pitcher of the Year. She holds over 1,600 strikeouts in the NPF. Out of Santa Cruz, California originally, please welcome Monica Abbott to the show. Monica, thanks for being on today.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me today. It's always a pleasure to like be able to give back and just talk shop. So looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, we're going to rewind time, so to speak, and probably take you back to some memory lanes here. And I want to start here with you. At what age did softball start for you, and how were you introduced to the sport?
So I actually, I played t-ball and all of that. You know, your mom puts you in everything, right? Yeah. Swimming, you know, volleyball, basketball. I was doing, you know, street hockey. We were a really active family. I have a lot of brothers and sisters. So we were always outside playing. But I really got into softball because my older sister brought a flyer home from school and wanted to sign up. And my mom had actually played in this same organization called Bobby Sox when she was like a kid in middle school and high school. And so my sister brought this flyer home and she really wanted to sign up because all her friends were being involved. So I kind of got put into the sport as a tag along to my older sister. And for the longest time I was known as, you know, Jessica's sister, which is her name. And I was just the tag along following everyone to the softball field.
And eventually somewhere it starts to take off. When you look back at your youth softball, like just early days, what kind of memories pop up right away?
You know, early days in youth softball, I really remember things like just doing the cheers and chasing foul balls and trying to get candy from the snack bar, you know, like turning the ball, get a piece of licorice. Like that was our goal as a kid. But I really remember just running around the ballpark. It was a very much a family experience for me. My older sister played, so I was on her team. My dad ended up signing up to be like the local umpire in the rec league, and he helped. So we were always at the field kind of running around. My mom was the team manager. It was very much a family experience for me, and I loved that. I loved it. I loved being outside. I loved being around other kids and playing and just trying to stay out of trouble, but getting as much foul balls as possible, I guess.
Who was it that decided, let's take Monica and put her in the circle and see how she does?
Actually, it's not that. It's kind of the same thing happened again. Like I was just the tag along sister. And I was just having fun. I wasn't very good at softball, but I was always on the team because Jessica was on the team. And one year, our rec team, our Bobby Sox team, needed a pitcher. And Jessica, who played shortstop and was a good hitter, and then I was kind of like the kid that got 2 innings in right field, she decided they're like, why don't you try pitching? They convinced her. My mom's like, well, why don't we just get her a pitching lesson from this coach, Coach Kenny Gardner, who at that time was doing lessons at the field, and we would see him out there giving pitching lessons. And I ended up having to catch for her, which was terrifying, like just terrifying. Like she threw the ball so hard, like I mean, let's be honest. I was afraid of the ball. It was a long way down for me to sit in a squat. Like, I didn't like it. I was diving out of the way. But at the end of the lesson, the coach kind of came over to me and was like, hey, you're left-handed. I'm left-handed. I would love to teach you how to pitch. Like, why don't you try pitching? And it kind of blew over for about a month. And a little bit later on, I asked my mom for a lesson, and she thought I was joking. And she made me work to get that lesson. And long story short, I did a bunch of like random chores and eventually got a pitching lesson and fell in love.
Now that you're falling in love with pitching, what do you remember first about going, okay, this is what I really want to do right here. And I really enjoy pitching.
You know, I think when I started pitching, I had to work so hard to like get that first lesson that it made me want it more. But also, before that time, like I was just kind of that kid that just, I was there doing the cheers. I was eating snacks in the dugout. Like I was playing two innings, like hoping to get four balls so I could get on first base. Like I was, you know, I hadn't really found a home on the softball field. But when I stepped in the circle, when I stepped on the mound, that's when I really was like, whoa, like I can actually do this. Like, I get it. Like, this makes sense to me. And that once I found my home there on the field, like what position I could play and be good at, that's when the game started to click for me. I started to get hits. I moved from, you know, right field to center field. I moved from center field to, you know, shortstop to first. And I started becoming better at the game and understanding it. And so pitching eventually just made me become a better athlete.
This is great, because I'm sure there's listeners out that are going, oh, it's Monica Abbott. And, you know, she strikes out everybody, and it's been easy for her all along. And to hear the story going, I was in right field and I had two innings. This is great for her to hear, for kids that are listening going, it doesn't start as easy as you think. There's always roadblocks and challenges along the way.
Yeah. I think for kids and for parents to just hear that, like, it's definitely a growth thing. Like, sport doesn't come easy for right away for most people. And you kind of have to learn a skill. And as I got older, you know, my hand eye coordination got better. My footwork got better. My strength got better. And then I just kept working at it. And I had a nice little routine that I would practice by myself or with my mom or my sister. And over time, I slowly got better and better. And which made me see that success. You know, when you see a little glimpse of hope, you're like, man, I got to keep practicing. I could be good. Like, let me keep trying. Let me try to, you know, now let me set a goal. Now let me set a process. How am I going to reach this goal? Now let me figure out, you know, what I can do to help my team. And little by little, step by step, you start to improve and you get to see the fruits of your labor.
In 1999 through 2003, you attended North Salinas High School. And in 2001, you were their MVP. That was your sophomore year. You were named All League, All County, All Central Coast. Sophomore year, did things start to click? Were you starting to get comfortable with being in the circle more?
Yeah. I think, yeah, every high school was such a good time. We had several other pitchers on our team that were really good. I think I just felt more comfortable. I was a freshman playing varsity, but so as a sophomore coming back, I think I had a better relationship with some of the older girls and a better understanding of, you know, what our team goals were and what we wanted to do.
The following year, your junior year, you're named the High School Junior of the Year, the California High School Sports Bay Area Player of the Year. You're All League, All County, and All Central Coast MVP now. So we've stepped up another notch the junior year. Is that when the recruitment to college kind of started kicking in, or was it after that?
For me personally, like, so I started getting like inquiry letters from colleges going into high school when I was in middle school and okay. In freshman year, and then sophomore year at that time, they could start recruiting. But at the end of my sophomore year, I got injured. I pulled a muscle that runs from your low back into your hamstring, and it kind of cut my season short, and I tried to play through it. And I just wasn't the same pitcher because I was in pain when I was pitching. And so my junior year, I felt like I was healthy the whole season and I was more comfortable. And now I was an upperclassman and people had started recruiting me. Yes. And, there was kind of like a little bit, well, we didn't finish my sophomore year the way I wanted to. So my junior year, we were like, you know, guns blazing, let's get out there and do what we're supposed to do. Like we had that little tint of regret. And obviously I carried that burden a little bit on myself because I had been injured. So I really wanted to step up and be better for my team. And I think it showed.
Yeah, obviously, when you look at all the accolades you got your junior year, you can see that that next level went up there. And in 2003, you went to the Canada Cup in the 18U and you were the MVP there. How did you get chosen for that? And what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, in 2003, so my travel ball team, we went up to the Canada Cup, which was really cool. My travel ball coach, Keith Berg, his wife was actually Canadian. And so it wasn't too far from, I think, in Vancouver or where were we? Somewhere where the Canada Cup is. And we got to go up there. It was just like the fun trip for the summer trip that the softball team went on. And it was a lot of fun. And we got to have a taste of international softball and the differences between American softball and Canadian softball. There was other teams there. I think Chinese Taipei was there. I'm not sure what other teams at this. I know Chinese Taipei. There's a couple other teams. It was a lot of fun. It was just like, you're having so much fun off the field and on the field. I always remember Canada had these really good donuts. So I was just like, man, their donuts are so good. I think that's what made me pitch so well. So
what was the biggest differences you've seen in international play coming from America playing over there?
I think international play, I think style is different. The game itself is the same. You know, the bones of the game are the same. You know, you hit the ball, you throw the ball, you pitch the ball, all those sort of things. But the style in which people play, I think you could definitely start to see how the Asian teams like Chinese Taipei, China, Japan, just definitely their footwork on their speed and short game style was a really big part of their game. They didn't really slap. They laid down kind of like, we call it like the Ichiro style, kind of like the slash and run. And their foot speed defensively was really good, very disciplined. Canada or the Canadian team, I feel like, you know, they definitely have an American influence because a lot of them play college in the United States. Or you would have played against them in travel ball. So there's a Canadian influence there. But at the same time, I feel like their style of just base to base, just definitely their team aspect of the game was really strong. So being able to see that part and how that can apply to me and my team is really fun. It was an eye-opening experience to see like different cultures in different countries playing the same game.
And you talked earlier about, you know, you were did a lot of sports as a kid and we're always active and we've been really focusing on softball because that's what you're known for and that's what you do. But I also understand you were recruited for basketball just as well as softball to college, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Were you playing basketball in high school as well too?
Yes, I played basketball in high school. Our team was really good. We won our CIF local, you know, our central CCS, CIF, went to state for basketball. Obviously I played center or power forward. Sometimes I like to dribble the ball down the court, but my coach would always yell at me. He's like, you're not the point guard. Pass the ball. but yeah, Coach Darren Jackson, he was such a big inspiration on me. And I loved basketball. I really, I got recruited by a lot of schools. I didn't do a lot of, which is kind of incredible because I didn't do a lot of extra basketball stuff. So I didn't play like club basketball. I didn't go to a lot of club tournaments or anything like that. Most of it was out of high school, that I got recruited for basketball. And I had some offers to play both basketball and softball. And But in the end, I knew that softball was where my future was and where my heart lied. But that basketball was something that was like fun and energetic and just like a great change of scenery for me to keep, to not get burned out and to also just work on my athletic skills and do something that was a little bit more lighthearted for me, not so serious.
And you're known as a power pitcher with your speed and can really ramp it up. Mm-hmm. When did you really start realizing to yourself that you were a powerful pitcher and you could just start throwing it by people?
I'm not really sure. Do you ever really realize that?
I don't know. That's why I was wondering. I'm like, in high school, did you start realizing, man, I can just kind of throw it right down the middle and they're not going to catch it? Or were you always trying to spot on corners?
I mean, I knew that I could throw the ball well when I was on varsity in high school. Our league at the time in our area was really good. We had some good pitchers already committed to colleges such as Texas Tech or Sonoma State or Cal, or people that were, you know, going to big schools to play softball in our actual league. And so I knew that I was competitive, but I never really felt like, hey, like I can just like blow it by people. I can throw, you know, really, really fast. I don't think until I was on the national team that I really realized, like, I had Coach Karen Johns. She was assisting with us. And she's like, sometimes you got to just, or Coach Kirk Walker on some of the younger USA teams. She's like, sometimes you just got to rear back and just try to throw it as hard as you can. Like, why not? Like, just see what you can do. And if, you know, don't give them a chance. Don't let them foul it off. Just like rear back and like, see if you can just throw it hard and blow it by them. And I don't think I really, really physically or mentally knew I could do that until they challenged me to do it. I was maybe doing it subconsciously, but I don't think I actually mentally put two and two together until a coach said something to me.
And with all the recruitment and all the offers and letters that you had, why did you choose Tennessee to go play for the Vols?
I went to Tennessee because at the time I was being recruited by a lot of different schools, but Tennessee, I felt like I had a good connection with them. I knew I wanted to go to a big time sports school, and there was really no better place in my mind and in my family's mind to be a female athlete. Not only to be an athlete, but a female athlete on campus. I loved the way they supported the Lady Vols in that community, how it was basically a sports school, a sports city. And I felt like it was an up and coming program. Coach Ralph and Karen Weekly were putting, making moves to be a contender, and they just needed two or three athletes to help them. And I felt like I could help and make a difference at that school.
And you're there from 2004 to 07. You're the SEC Freshman of the Year, Pitcher of the Year, and all SEC first team. And I want to kind of fast forward just a little bit. On April 21st, in your 33rd game, you had strikeout number 500. You're the first pitcher in D1 history to record 500 strikeouts in all 4 years. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that moment?
Yeah. You know, that's awesome that you bring that up. A lot of people don't talk about that, but I think just being able, you know, I was a power pitcher. I'm a strikeout pitcher. That's what I did. And I think at the time, you know, our team was just, we didn't always score a lot of runs, and I was just doing my best to like keep us in the game and make some big outs and like just like sometimes, like you said, just like rear back and just throw it as hard as I could, like throw fireballs. But being able, when I hear that now and I'm like, oh my gosh, 500 strikeouts, you know, for 4 years, like that is a lot of strikeouts.
It's a lot.
Like, it's a lot. And when I think about it looking back, I'm kind of like in shock. But in the moment, I know I was just trying to do what I could to help the team. I was trying to get them out. I wasn't out there thinking like, oh, I got to strike out more people. I was like, if the strikeout's there, like, I'm going to take it. I'm going to try to strike you out. I don't want anybody on base. Like, let's not give them a chance.
Yeah. Did you get to keep the ball? Did somebody save the ball for you?
Yes, I have the ball.
Good. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's sitting on my, it's in my office. So
That's great. And the strikeouts, I mean, the records just continue to go. In 2007, you have 22 strikeouts versus Florida, the highest single game record. You had to feel that game that you're just in a groove and everything was clicking for you.
Yeah. You know, when you're striking out a lot of people, sometimes like you definitely get into a groove, you get into a zone where it's almost subconscious and it feels light and there's tunnels for your pitches and things are lighting up on where you want the ball to go and the ball's going there. And those games don't come every day. So you gotta appreciate with them when they do come, and you just gotta live in the moment and just be like, man, I'm doing it. Things are going well for me. Let me just keep going and try not to lose that mindset of being so completely in the moment when you're pitching.
And talking about things going well, senior season, you set the NCAA record for most strikeouts. You become the all-time leader in career wins, strikeouts, innings pitched, games started, and games pitched, which is remarkable. Your NCAA record of 189 wins and 2,440 strikeouts is just mind-blowing to all of us that are in, you know, that understand softball and people that are in that. It's mind-blowing to put those numbers on page and look at them. When I was actually doing it, I actually looked at it again. I'm like, wait a minute, did that say 2,440 strikeouts? So
yeah.
Powerful pitcher, absolutely. And with all of that, what I was want to ask you, Monica, is what's your fondest achievement as a team? Because you have all these individual accolades as a team when you were at University of Tennessee.
I think as a team and as a class, I think my class and the class below me and the class above me, I think our probably biggest achievement as a team is putting Tennessee softball on the map. I think before we were there, you know, they were middle of the SEC, you know, most years, some years if it was a bad year, they were bottom of the SEC, but really putting them to the top, taking them to the Women's College World Series, you know, consistently and leaving a legacy of a program. I think at some point all sports programs need people to like push the program forward and to set a standard. But now when you go back to Tennessee, they have the Tennessee Crazies, you know, they have the people in the stands that have been lifetime fans since that time. And to me, that's pretty incredible because you see the impact that we put also on the softball community in Tennessee, but also within the SEC to start setting some standards for the sport.
And you've done so much besides University of Tennessee. You were in the Junior Worlds, World Championship 4 different times, Pan American Games, Japan Cup, USA International Cup. I mean, you've done all these things, and people will put links in the show notes so you can take a look at all these accolades. The ERA is ridiculous. It's either zero or right around zero all the time. In 2005 to 2010, you were with the United States national team. What was it like being chosen to go, hey, we want you to come play for the country now?
Honestly, like, I think that's been like some of my biggest joy is just wearing USA across my chest and being able to be one of the few that represent our country in that way and on an international level, but also just, I think there's only so many people that can make that team. And it's not only about how good you are as a pitcher or as a shortstop or as a center fielder. You have to have the full package and things that define you as an athlete, and also being able to meld that together as a team, how you are as a teammate, how you work well with others. So I've really enjoyed being able to be a part of Team USA. In 2005, you know, they were coming off the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens, you know, the sweetheart team. And I came in as, you know, kind of the young kid, the up and comer. And being able to work with people like Lisa and Jenny Finch and Stacey Newman really made a huge impact on my career because I was able to kind of go under their wing and like talk to them about softball and talk to them about college. And they also were really just great examples of teaching me what it meant to be like a full-time athlete, a professional in the game. And I just can't thank people enough, like Jessica Mendoza or Natasha Watley, just helping me grow within the sport.
And one of the questions I always like to ask, Monica, is when you have somebody like of yourself that has all these accolades and playing for the country and everything, can you kind of just in a short version talk about the amount of hard work and stuff you had to do that people don't even see to get you where you were?
Yeah, I think, there's definitely a lot of things you don't see and a lot of buildup and preparation that goes into playing the game, you know, and whether that's on the field or off the field, it's all a full picture and it's a lifestyle at the professional level. So you have to think about everything, whether it is, you know, your training, how you're going to apply that to your sport, your softball training, your physical training, your nutrition, your recovery, you know, all aspects of it. And it does make a difference when you're expected to play at the highest level.
2007, then we're going to jump forward. I just want to let people know the honors that you got. You were the Honda Sports Award as the top collegiate softball player in the country, the USA Softball Collegiate Player of the Year, Women's Sports Foundation Sportsman of the Year, all well-deserved and very well-earned. They weren't just given to you. You earned those, so congratulations on that. And then on 2008, you're in Beijing in the Olympics, and all of a sudden now you're playing for the gold. August 11th was your Olympic debut in a relief appearance. What do you remember about first time going out to the circle, and now you're not playing for Tennessee, now you're playing for USA in the Olympics?
Yeah, honestly, it's the Olympics. Your adrenaline is just running. Gosh, I don't think I took a single breath during that inning. I just made a relief appearance. I think my coach wanted me to get like my nervous jitters out for later on in the tournament, but I was so like excited and amped up. And I just remember adrenaline just running through my veins and like, oh my gosh, this is actually happening.
And then a week later, you get five innings and you throw five perfect innings and eight strikeouts. Did that help then, having that relief appearance calm you down for a week later, or were you still amped up?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped having that relief appearance because, I mean, every Olympic game is like super intense and adrenaline is just running. But having the relief experience, at least you like have a little bit of the feel of like how your adrenaline is going to like respond to you. You know, but yeah, I think that game was pretty incredible and just an awesome experience.
This is a stat that just blew me away. In six games between Jenny Finch, Kat Osterman, and yourself, you guys allowed one hit. I mean, three pitchers, six games, they gave up one hit. You guys had to really be feeling like, you know, we are locked and loaded and everybody's throwing really well.
Yeah, I think we were such a talented team in 2008. We definitely, yeah, we were very talented and we had great leadership on all levels of the field. But I tell you what, if you put all three of us in the room and you brought up that one hit, we probably would be pissed that we gave up one hit.
I can see that for sure. And then you walk out of the Olympics with the silver. I'm sure everybody was disappointed that you didn't have the gold. We don't need to go into that. I mean, but what I want to go into in 2009 is with the Toyota Motor Corporation, you have a 6-month contract to play professionally in Japan. How did that come about for you?
Well, Japan has a professional league that's pretty established. It's been around for quite some time. I can't even remember. Oh, 50 years now, something like that. So it's been around for quite some time. Wow. It's company owned. And right out of college, they were kind of like scouting me out and I had several offers and I kept telling them, no, you know, Japan is USA's rival and, you know, all of that. And then we went to the Olympics and we lost to Japan in the finals. And a lot of the companies, coaches and stuff like that, that are in the league were obviously at the Olympics. And so after that, they started to come again, like, Monica, why don't you come to Japan? And I still was kind of hesitant, you know, we just lost to Japan. You're Japan's USA's rival, like America, let's go kind of thing. And it took me a while to come to terms with, hey, like, I have a great opportunity to learn, to play, and to be a professional. And at the time in the United States, like after post-Olympics, like we could play in the pro league, but it wasn't a sustaining venture for us as far as life. I wasn't in college anymore. I needed to make, you know, income. And Natasha Watley came to me and a couple teams and offers came, and they're like, why don't we go over there together? We get along well. And Tosh and I were like, okay, like, let's just try it for 1 year. It's a good opportunity. We go for 1 year. And if it's not what we like, then we're done. And so we went over there, and long story short, like, completely fell in love with the culture, the food, just the way of life, and honestly fell in love with having the opportunity to play softball for a living. And I loved having the chance to work on my skills as a pitcher, to learn about just the game, about myself in the game. And I learned so much and evolved so much as an athlete. I feel like I became a better pitcher and a better athlete. And I became a professional, you know, out of college in those 2008 Olympic Games. I was very raw. You know, I had never played professionally. I hadn't played like a full professional season yet. I was the youngest athlete in 08, and in Japan playing for Toyota, I was able to really develop. I was able to be challenged in ways that I wasn't challenged in the US because of things like language, food, culture, being far away, not having a social network. Like all I had, it was just literally Tosh and I over there, you know, kind of coaching each other and talking the game and learning what it took to change who we were on a regular basis. And so I ended up loving the opportunity to be a professional, and I've been over there playing for 11 years now.
Eventually no turned into yes, and now yes has turned into glad I did it.
Yeah. You know, you never know what kind of opportunities are going to come up, and you have to like, and what doors will open for you. And I've been blessed to have some really cool opportunities through this sport. And when a door is open, I've just kind of like, okay, like, can I do this? You know, is this the right thing for me? And I just ran through it. I ran through that door to Japan, and I've been running ever since. And it's been a great opportunity, and I'm so glad that I had the chance to go over there and continue my career.
Back here in America, you eventually get into the MPF. And what I want to bring up too is, May 5th, 2010, you're traded to the Tennessee Diamonds. You were with the Florida Pride. They pretty much exchanged a couple of players. Cat Osterman was involved in that. What was it like all of a sudden being traded back to Tennessee where you played college?
Well, it was at the time, it was kind of mixed emotions, to be honest. I was with the USSSA Florida Pride their first year. I helped them kind of, you know, develop some of their processes as they were going to move forward into the league with Kelly Crutchman and Caitlin Lowe. And then overnight I was basically traded for Cat Osterman. My catcher, Shannon Depkin, and I were traded in a swap for Cat Osterman and Megan Willis, which was her catcher. And it was a little bit like, you know, hurt a little bit just because it was a team that I felt like we were starting to build. And I was starting to get some of my friends and teammates to go to the team. And then all of a sudden overnight, like I was switched to, you know, a brand new team, an up and coming team. And yes, it was in Tennessee. So that part was really cool and awesome. But a little bit of us, our heart was just like, oh, like we had put some time and effort in trying to help them, you know, help them get started. And now we have to do it all over again. But having the chance to play at that time, it was in Nashville, was really cool.
Great. I'm glad that worked out. And then from 2011 to 2015, you're with the Bandits. And then from 2016 to present, you're with the Scrapyard Dogs in the Fast Pitch League. And this is what I think is really cool. You signed a $1 million contract. Do you feel like, Monica, that hopefully opened doors for more girls and females going forward to get paid like they should be in professional leagues?
Yeah, I really do. I think it helped create a standard shortly after, I think a year or 2 years later, you know, Patty Gasso at OU, she signed a $1 million contract in the coaching world of softball, which was you know, groundbreaking as well. And I had a conversation with her and she said, you know, I never thought that it was possible, but when I saw your contract, I was like, I need to negotiate better. I need to do a better job. And I need to set that precedent. Like, why don't I have this yet? And I think so it was a little bit eye-opening for a lot of people in the world. And also kind of like at the beginning of the women's movement, it was really a great opportunity and really cool for the scrapyard to step up in that way, because it is a valid sport. We do have valid fans and companies support us. So like, let's jump a level, like let's set a standard. Let's keep athletes in the game longer. Like if you graduate from college, you should have the opportunity to play professionally for multiple years and hopefully find a way to make a salary that can keep you playing in the game. And we're not quite there professionally yet. Like you still have to do other things, but it is so much better off than it was 10 years ago.
I agree. And I'm going to challenge people right now. If you haven't been to a professional fast pitch game, please, when it gets back going, get out there and look and see it. I've seen many. I'm from Illinois. I've seen the Bandits a handful of times. And I'm telling you, people, you will not be disappointed. It's legit. It is legit.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I challenge you guys as well. Like, get out there and support your professional women in the game. And that can be, you know, at the Bandits games, at the Scrapyard, the Pride games as well. But it also is doing things like, hey, buying the Wilson, you know, softball glove, that Monica Abbott glove, the Aubrey Monroe glove, the, you know, equipment like that, buying the equipment, supporting the athletes, whether it's on live stream or sharing that stuff on your social media is huge too. And like, you know, why not have a watch party when we're live streamed on extrainnings.com? Watch those games, come out if you can, you know, get the jerseys, the stuff like that, because that stuff is really important, because all that trickles back down to keeping the professionals in the game and making a better opportunity for us all in the sport down the road.
And I also tell the parents this, if you haven't been and you're thinking about it, the players are super approachable after the game. I mean, you guys all hang around. I've seen you take pictures with kids and sign softballs galore. I mean, it's a great time to bring your family and bring your kids out to see these ladies play softball. It's fantastic. Monica, moving forward, I want to ask you about your foundation. What is it? If you explain what it's about and how it's going.
Yeah. So I have the Monica Abbott Scholarship Foundation, and it is an education format for athletes. It was started in 2013 or 2012, maybe. And the scholarship gives out two individual scholarships to high school seniors that play multiple sports and demonstrate leadership, not only in the classroom, but in their athletic arenas. I developed this at the time just as another opportunity for creating future leaders in our sport. Maybe, you know, you get a softball scholarship, but it's not a full ride. Maybe you were a great athlete in high school, but you want to stay involved in the sport and you're going to go work for Wilson. You're going to go work for Nike. You know, how can we have an impact on some of the great athletes, some of the people that love the sport that can make a difference, you know, 4 or 5 years from now? And that's really what the scholarship is about, is just passing it forward, paying it forward, and creating more opportunities for people.
And I'll put a link in the show notes for everybody. You can click on that if you want to find more information on the foundation, if you want to look at applying. Monica, 2020 Tokyo has been postponed. Before we go into that, what was your involvement or your thoughts of getting softball back to the Olympics where it deserves to be?
Yeah. Honestly, softball going out of the Olympics was devastating for our sport. We really hadn't been in that long. We'd been in for 3 Olympics. And for it to come out was just devastating for us internationally, because you lose funding, you lose the growth in some of those countries that really need it. You know, the countries like your China's, like your Italy's, your Netherlands, your Spain's, your England, Great Britain. You lose funding. And yes, college softball in America is really great, and fully funded because of Title IX and things like that, but you lose the funding internationally and it puts a makes you take a step back in the softball world. So getting back to the Olympic Games for 2020 in Tokyo was huge. And it makes such a big difference because now funding comes back for these countries and people are able to grow and travel, grow in their sport and travel to play internationally and get better competition. You know, iron sharpens iron. So having, you know, Spain be able to travel to play, having Peru travel to play for the Pan Am Games and stuff like that is really, really important. And, you know, Tokyo, it only made sense as a baseball softball country to have that sport. I had many, many conversations with actually the president of Toyota about softball and about it coming back into the Olympics, and Toyota is a major sponsor for the Olympics. So there's a lot of things going on, a lot of puzzle pieces in place. And honestly, just happy that it finally worked out that we have an opportunity to showcase our sport now on the Olympic stage again, but more importantly, having the opportunity to show the growth that we've had. And I think so much of that has to do with the media attention that we're getting post-college, then social media, media attention, and then also just things like live streaming, social media, education, online education for athletes and in sports. As the talent in the athletes grow, the product on the field becomes better, right? And people want to be involved in something so positive. People want to be involved in the growth and the change in a professional sport. And it's coming. And we all see it. We all feel it.
How is it now being on the Olympics where first time you're on, you're the youngster, and now you're the veteran?
I like, it's definitely a change being a veteran on the team. But, you know, I love it. I love to be able to kind of help educate, help set a standard for these women. We have such a really, such a good group of girls on our national team right now. And everyone is hungry. Everyone wants to be the best version, the best athlete that they can be. And that's really empowering. So really love the community and group that we have with the Janie Reed and Allie Aguilar, Delaney Spalding, just like a really good group.
We'll all be watching and cheering you guys on when we finally get to the Olympics, yeah, when it's time to do so. Have you ever thought about how much longer you'll continue to play?
No.
I like that. Have you ever thought about maybe one day being a coach when you're done playing?
Well, I already kind of coach some right now. I do online training, online education, and you can, you know, find that via my website. I do a lot of clinics and camps to help promote the sport. So I kind of have a little bit of a coaching feel already. You know, I think I'm going to cross that bridge when it comes, and I don't think I'm quite there yet.
Gotcha. Two more questions before I let you go. One is, what kind of advice can you give to a youngster listening to this podcast that's looked up to you and maybe idolizes you and goes, I want to be like Monica one day?
I think the biggest thing is to, A, obviously set some goals, but just, you know, try to be consistent in your practice. If you can get in, you know, 30 minutes a day, that can make a huge difference for you.
And the last one I found really interesting when I was putting all this together to talk today is, you have a pet peeve, and it's someone puts their hand in their glove and then they start reworking the sides. Where did that come from? And does it just drive you up the wall?
Hey, like, everyone has their own equipment. You shouldn't put in your hand in someone's glove without asking first. That's like an unwritten rule. I mean, come on now. I mean, I got my glove formed and shaped the way I wanted, and you're going to put your hand in my glove and start like pounding it and like closing it, putting the fingers, you know, pinky to thumb. Like, it's my glove. Stop touching it.
Right. I get it. Monica, any last words today?
No, not at all. Thank you so much for having me, and hope to see you all out at a game.
Yes, everybody get out there, and I appreciate you being on the show. Please go and subscribe to the show. We can be found anywhere where you can find podcasts like Apple, Google, Alexa, Stitcher, you name it. Rate and review the show. You can also join the Patreon page. For show notes, go to our website and Instagram, Before the Lights Podcast. You can follow us there. Thank you for listening to Before the Lights. I'm Tommy Canale. Until next time, A salute, a chin chin.